1 Peter 1:6-7. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's about trials and difficulties. Brethren, we all know that COVID-19, and everybody is very, very, very painfully aware of the effects it has had. It has changed the world. And in this tiny yet highly contagious virus shut down economies and put people out of work and created massive medical challenges and pressed government authority and disrupted families and cost countless lives. It increased anxiety and depression and fed upon many of our personal fears. It was an unwelcome guest who created havoc and at every turn refused to leave. Now that we may be beginning, and time will tell on this, but now that we may be beginning to see COVID in our rearview mirror, we're more and more being presented with the idea of getting back to our normal lives. But it's not the same. After 16 months of fear and uncertainty and disconnection, many of us are not just running back to the old ways. And in our own class in New Haven, we had several discussions about meeting back in person. And as the elder who was responsible for chairing those discussions, I was thinking again and again and again, how do we have this conversation and listen? And I kept saying to myself, meet them where they are. Just meet them where they are. Thus the title, Where Are They? That's how this all came about. So it was an experience in our own home ecclesia. Meet them where they are. How do we do that? How do we truly understand where our brethren might be in their experiences as we seek to reevaluate, reconnect, and reestablish the depth of our fellowship? Now, the lessons today that we're going to focus on are much deeper than just the COVID experience. But for me, the COVID experience of the separation and the distancing helped me to see these lessons far more obviously than I would have without that experience. So while we're talking about the COVID experience, we're talking about our experience in general, one with another. The answers to where are they, I believe, come from the experiences of several heroes of faith in Scripture. Well, we want to understand where our brethren are in their experience in light of where we would desire them to be for their highest spiritual welfare. Sometimes we look at someone and we see where they are, we see where we'd like them to be, and we say, wait, there seems to be a discrepancy there. Well, to see where they are, to do this, we need to look to the Father, the God of all wisdom, to see how he drew and he molded those important faithful ones to his plan. Let's see how God met these heroes of faith where they were, so he could bring them higher and learn how we can, based on godly principles, meet each other where we are and do the same. Where were God's heroes of faith when he called them to action? We're going to give four examples today. The first is Moses. Now, the lesson of Moses here is being met in being met by God where we are is when we're overwhelmed by the magnitude of a task or a change before us. So meeting Moses where he was, God met him where he was overwhelmed by the magnitude of the task or change before him. God called Moses to deliver Israel and establish their independence. Moses responded, but he wasn't perfect. And that's going to be the theme through everything. There's always a response, and it's never perfect. Whew. We should be glad for that, because that's where we are. Moses was of a meek character, beyond reproach, and this gave him a special relationship with God, though it was not easy for him to initially accept the responsibilities God was giving him. So God's message to Moses, we're going to find that in Exodus 3, right through Exodus chapter 4, verses 1 through 9. So we're not going to read it, but we'll just sum it up. God showed Moses, when he's calling him to deliver the people, he showed him that he would give him miraculous power. He told him the challenges he would meet in dealing with Pharaoh. He explained the need for the plagues upon Egypt, and he even mentioned Israel taking spoils when they would eventually be set free. God detailed. He saw the future and told Moses about it. With all of this detailed foresight and encouragement, Moses was still unsure of himself. Let's pause. Do we sometimes have Moses-like challenges? Can we be shown overwhelming divine providence and foresight, and yet we can still feel unsure of ourselves. Here's Moses' response to God after God gives him all of this incredible foresight in Exodus 4, 10 to 13. Then Moses said to the Lord, "Please, Lord, I have never been so eloquent, neither recently nor in times past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." And the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now then go, and even I will be your mouth and teach you what to say." So God said, "No worries, I've got you." But Moses said, "Please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will." Moses is saying, "I don't think I'm the one for the job." Brethren, sometimes our response to our Father when facing tasks that in our best estimation seem beyond our capacity is for God in his wisdom to choose somebody else. What about that brother? What about that sister? What about those over there? I don't think I can. Well, God met Moses where he was, and he blessed him mightily. Exodus 4, verses 14 to 17. Now, the first phrase doesn't sound so meeting where he was, but we'll get to that. "Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses, and he said, 'Is there not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently, and moreover, behold, he's coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he'll be glad of heart. You are to speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I," this is God, "even I will be your mouth and his mouth. I will teach you what you are to do. Moreover, he shall speak for you to the people, and he will be as a mouth for you, and you be as God to him. You shall take in your hand this staff with which you will perform the signs." So this starts out, God is angry. Now, why would God be angry? He had given Moses his assurance that his own mighty hand would guide Moses' words and actions. He told Moses unequivocally, "I have got you in this." Yet Moses was still unsure. Here's the beauty. Did God's anger mean that Moses was not worthy? No. God met him where he was and blessed him mightily because Moses had a heart for God and the discipline to be the kind of leader that God needed to do this massive task. God chose Moses, imperfections and all. Finding out where they are lesson. Here's the lesson we want to draw from that and apply to ourselves. Learning to adjust to the magnitude of trust God can have in us can be overwhelming. Even though we are perhaps all in regarding serving him, we sometimes shrink at the prospects and want to defer. If overwhelmed, let us seek to co-labor instead of seeking to sit this one out. Brethren, let us seek to work together. God provided co-laboring for Moses. Let us, in our Moses-like challenges, especially recovering from COVID, perhaps we're feeling like, "I don't know, I'm very unsure, I don't think I can do this." Let us stretch ourselves a little bit further. Do I know where my brethren are? Could they be having Moses-like challenges, dealing with COVID or dealing with their lives and their experiences in general? Am I willing to stand with them and bless them when they're fighting through their challenges and their personal lack of surety and their faith seems to be overwhelmed? Am I going to stand with them? Am I going to find a way to support them? Find out where they are. Stand by them. Where were God's heroes of faith when he called them to action? Our next example is that of Gideon. Gideon is a lesson in being met by God where we are, and here's the context of this lesson, when we are in need of strong assurance while facing a monumental battle. When we're in need of strong assurance while facing monumental battle. This is different than Moses' experience. Moses didn't have the confidence in his own ability with the words. Gideon needed strong assurance in the wake of facing a massive, massive battle. God called Gideon to deliver Israel. Gideon responded, but he wasn't perfect. Gideon was a mighty warrior and a hero of faith and a deliverer of Israel. He lived at a time when Israel had turned to paganism, was overrun by the Midianites. He was visited by an angel, given the mission to defeat the Midianites, who had overrun Israel for 7 years with their massive numbers and idolatrous ways. Gideon was valiant, chosen, and faithful, and yet he needed extra assurance as he was facing what seemed to be an impossible military task. Let's get into a few of the details, but first, let's ask the question. Could I be having Gideon-like challenges where I already have all the tools, but I still need that strong assurance? Could I be in that situation? Is one of my brethren or some of my brethren, are they willing to meet me where I am with that struggle? God's message to Gideon was clear and powerfully delivered by an angel at the outset. Gideon responded with faith and courage. We're going to drop in on Gideon's experience after the angel appeared and after Gideon had destroyed an altar of Baal and a grove of trees used for pagan worship. So Gideon had made a statement with his actions about following through. He was being faithful. That wasn't the major showdown, though. The major showdown was going to begin in Judges chapter 6, verses 33 to 35. The Midianites and Amalekites set up camp around the Israelites, and Gideon, he gets the message out to the other tribes. 32,000 men assemble to fight for Israel against an army of 135,000. Not a fair fight. 4-1. And of course, we know the story. We know how it gets reduced down to 300 and God delivers them miraculously. But this is what Gideon is facing with these military odds. So Gideon's response to God's message, God says to him, you're going to fight them and you will overcome them. I will take care of this. So he's leading. He is already leading. Gideon, though, while leading, is still developing and he has a need to be sure. He needed strong assurance. So in Judges chapter 6, verses 36 to 38. We'll do 36 and 37 first. Then Gideon said to God, if you will deliver Israel through me, as you have spoken, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. And if there is dew on the fleece only and it is dry on all the ground, then I will know that you will deliver Israel through me as you have spoken. Gideon wasn't walking away from the challenge. He just needed assurance to be able to move forward in the challenge. So he says to the Lord, I'm going to put this fleece out and let it be wet when all the ground around it is dry. 38. And it was so. And when he arose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, a full bowl of water. Gideon didn't just say, wow, it feels wet. He picked it out. And he wrung it out. He didn't just feel the fleece. He wrung out the magnitude of the miracle. He had this incredible assurance before him. Time out. Let's look at ourselves. Where are our brethren? Could they be having Gideon-like challenges of needing strong assurance? You know, coming back from the COVID experience for some of us is much more difficult than for others because of experience, because of history, because of a lot of things. Could they be having Gideon-like challenges and need strong assurance? We can also see the providence of God unfold before our eyes. Now, I can look at your experience and I can easily say, hey, look, brother, the fleece is soaking wet. God's assurance is evident. Come on, let's go. What are you waiting for? I can do that. But see, with Gideon, he had another question. Well, and I don't know what the questions were, but I'm going to speculate. What if there's something weird about this fleece that attracted the dew in some way? What if somebody came by and just spilled a bunch of water on it? What if? Gideon was encouraged, but he still had deep enough anxiety to feel the need for more assurance. So Gideon asks to reverse the test to make sure the results were unmistakably supernatural. You know, is God going to be angry? God met Gideon where he was, and God blessed him mightily. Judges 6, 39 to 40. Judges 6, 39 to 40. Then Gideon said to God, do not let your anger burn against me that I may speak once more. Please let me make a test once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, and let there be dew on all of the ground. The next verse is very telling. Verse 40. God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece, and dew was on all the ground. God met him where he was, because he was understanding that what he was calling upon for Gideon to do was outrageous on an earthly, in an earthly sense. To take 32,000 men and go up against 135,000. And of course, we know it wasn't 32,000 men, nor was it 10,000. It ended up being 300. So we have this experience of God meeting Gideon where he was so Gideon could get the experience that he needed so that he could deliver Israel in the appropriate way. Now, what about us putting out the fleece? We ought to be careful about that, brethren, because you know, Gideon wasn't looking for guidance. He was looking for assurance. God had already told him what to do, and he asked for a supernatural sign. I think we need to be careful about those things, but that's a subject for another talk. Gideon saw 135,000 of the enemy against his 32,000 and wanted surety on what God's will was. For us, 1 Corinthians 1, chapter 1, verse 27. 1 Corinthians 1, 27. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. God chose Gideon. He was weak and fearful, but he had a great heart for God. And he had an attitude of service, and he had courage. He just needed assurance. Where are our brethren? Finding out where they are, lesson number two. Learning to be mighty in the hand of God is a process. Sometimes we need extra reassurance. God grants us what we need. He understands the frailty and the weakness of our imperfect humanity, and he guides us to grow into wielding his might. He gets us, and he sees where we are, and he's willing to help us work to grow into being able to handle the might that he has in store for us. So the question I have to ask myself is, do I know where my brethren are in their Gideon-like challenges? Do I give them space to find the assurance they need rather than assuming the assurance I see will fill their need? Just because I see it doesn't mean they understand it or it's enough for them in their particular circumstance. Who am I to make a judgment on that brother or sister in their circumstances? Let me instead go to where they are and give them the encouragement. Meet them the way our father met Gideon. Give them those extra reassurances so they can be very, very much in line with and in tune with God's will and God's way. Third example, the Apostle Peter. Where were God's heroes of faith when he called them to action? Well, Peter is a lesson in being met by God where we are. And here's the context of this lesson. When we need to rise above our present comfort and sense of stability. This is a lesson in being met by God where we are when we need to rise above our present comfort and sense of stability. Now, God called Simon Peter through Jesus to be a leader of the apostles. We all know this. For Simon to respond, Jesus actually had to draw him three times, three different times, on three different occasions. Peter did respond, but he wasn't perfect. You notice the pattern so far. These heroes of faith always responded, and none of them are perfect. Peter, we know, became an absolute linchpin of the gospel. His heart dedication to leadership, were fed by learning to face his weakness and insecurity. Peter needed to learn that the comfort and stability of his fisherman's life could never match up to God's power through Jesus in his life. He was stable in his life as his fisherman. Jesus was calling him for much more. We're going to just touch on, very briefly, the three encounters in which Jesus drew Simon to him. Simon's first encounter with Jesus, this account takes place shortly after Jesus came back from his 40 days of fasting and praying, right near the beginning of his ministry. John chapter 1, verses 40 and 42. One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He found first his own brother Simon and said to him, "We have found the Messiah." And he brought him to Jesus. Now here's what happens. Andrew brings Simon to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "Simon, you are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Peter." Just like that. Not, "Hi, how are you? Where have you been? What do you do for a living?" He looks at him. "You are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Peter." Jesus saw something in Simon. Jesus' message to Simon is, you have a heart for God. I know this. And his family did. You can tell by Andrew being another member of his family saying, "We found the Messiah." So they're all looking. They're all in anticipation. But Jesus' message to Simon, "I know who you are, and I know who you can become." This is the first drawing. Jesus didn't invite Simon to follow him at that moment. He didn't say, "Come follow me." He simply said, "You're going to have a new name." He saw him for what he could be. Meeting Peter where he was, Jesus planted a seed of change and growth with this new name. That's all it was. It was a seed. Simon's second recorded interchange with Jesus is estimated to be 6 months to a year after his baptism, after Jesus' baptism. Jesus is back in Galilee, and he does not yet have a formal following in place. So we're going to look at Mark chapter 1. Verses 17 to 20, and Matthew chapter 4, verses 12 to 22. We're just going to condense these two way, 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 way down and just take a little bit from both of these renditions of the gospel. And this is after John the Baptist had been imprisoned. From that time, Jesus began to proclaim, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near." As he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, whose brother, again, Simon and Andrew, casting nets into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me. I will make you fish for men." Immediately, they left their nets and followed him. Jesus then called James and John, and they followed him as well. So in this context, we see them leaving their nets and going to follow Jesus. Okay? Here, Jesus begins to preach in earnest the necessary repentance for the kingdom. John is in prison, and Jesus' preaching increases. Now, Jesus' message to Simon here is, "I know you. Remember, I told you you'd have a new name. Now I want you to follow me for true satisfaction." God, through Jesus, met Peter where he was. Peter was able, even though it was temporary, because it says he left his nets and followed him, but he again went back to fishing later on. Meeting Peter where he was able, even though it was temporary, to leave his fishing nets behind. This promise of a new name now had an invitation to go with it, comfort and stability that Peter had in his very successful fishing business were beginning to look a little bit different here. Let's ask ourselves, could I be having Peter-like challenges with my attachments to the comfort of my own thinking and my own environment? Is the Lord looking for my undivided attention? Again, in our general experiences, could I be having challenges with my attachments and comfort and so forth of my own thinking? In the COVID experience, have I gotten so used to the isolation that moving out of it is difficult? Is the Lord looking for my undivided attention on a different level? Simon would be drawn one more time by Jesus. Simon's third recorded interaction with Jesus we find in Luke chapter 5, verses 2 through 11. Now, Jesus is preaching by the Lake of Gennesaret here. Luke 5, 2 through 11. And he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake, but the fishermen had got out of them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's. Interesting there. And he asked him to put out a little way from the land. And he sat down and began teaching the people from the boat. So he asked Simon, "Let's go out." And Simon is very, very compliant. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let's let your net down for a catch." So Jesus is asking Simon to do something very unusual. They had finished for the day and they really hadn't caught anything. So Simon is being very respectful and very humble. And Simon answered and said, Master, we worked hard all night and we caught nothing. But I will do as you say and let down the nets. So they go out to the deeper water. And when they had done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish and their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners and the others in the other boat for them to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so much that they began to sink. Imagine the bewilderment as Simon called for help. This was impossible. How could this catch be so magnificent after such a dry spell? Peter has now had interactions with Jesus very significantly twice, and this is the third. And here, as this experience is settling in, when Simon Peter saw that, when he saw what was happening, he fell down at Jesus' feet saying, Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. He just said, I can't, you're too big for me. For amazement had seized him and all his companions because of the catch of fish which they had taken. So also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, Do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men. When they brought their boats to land, they left everything and they followed him. Jesus' message to Simon, I know you, and I know you're willing to follow me away from what you have always known. Now, as you begin to follow me, your own sin seems overwhelming and unconquerable. But I say to you, as you follow me and as you trust in me, you can now do it without fear, for with my strength, this is Jesus speaking, you will become fearless fishers of men. Simon had to be drawn on three occasions to finally, fully follow Jesus. And of course, we know all of the experiences he had to have. Let's look at the lesson here and then apply it to ourselves. Finding out where they are lesson, learning to walk away from where we are and the perceived comfort of our circumstances can be daunting. God will show us small steps of understanding first and then steps of growing action so we can embrace our new and Christ-driven life. And brethren, we may have made those steps a long time ago, but it doesn't mean in parts of our lives we're not still needing to take those same steps again in this experience or that experience or with this situation or that. With this level of maturity, sometimes we have to begin those small step processes again and again and again. Where are our brethren with this? Do we know? How can we find out? By going to them where they are and engaging with them. Do I know where my brethren are in their Peter-like challenges of attachment? Because remember, he had this very successful business. And if you recall, each time when things got rough, what did Peter go do? He went back to fishing. Even after Jesus is crucified, he goes back to fishing. Am I aware of the process that my brethren must go through to grow? Jesus was with Peter. What about me? Am I encouraging that process? Jesus did with Peter. Do I? Do I contribute to that growth process? Jesus singled him out, quelled his fears, and then led him to faith. That's what Jesus did with Simon Peter. What about us with our brethren? Our final example, the Apostle Paul. Where were God's heroes of faith when he called them to action? With Paul, it's a lesson in being met by God where we are. And here's the context. When we are shown that our whole approach to our devotion to God needs to be undone and completely reset. God called Paul through Jesus to deliver the gospel to the Gentiles and to suffer for Christ. For Paul to respond, Jesus had to confront, call, and convert him. Paul did respond, but he wasn't perfect. All four of our examples did respond, but they weren't perfect. Why are we bringing this out? Because this is a comfort to us. We can respond, and we're not perfect. Paul became a key to the gospel's worldwide expansion. The challenge of the work he was called to was just as breathtaking as the errors and awful things that he had done and the place that he had come from. Saul of Tarsus had a heart for God. Just like Peter, just like Gideon, just like Moses, Saul also had a heart for God. He only wanted to serve God. He loved God above all else. He tells us that in Galatians 1:15-16. But when God, who had set me apart even from my mother's womb and called me through his grace, was pleased to reveal his son to me so that I may preach him among the Gentiles. That choosing came to light through several dark and sinful actions. So even though he had a heart for God, he was grossly misdirected and acted on that gross misdirection with great enthusiasm, unfortunately. And the apostle freely speaks of this, and this is important, speaking to his brethren about his past experiences. He says in Galatians 1:13, "For you have heard of my former manner of life in Judaism, how I used to persecute the church of God beyond measure, and I tried to destroy it." He freely admits, "I tried to destroy the church of God through Christ. That was my goal." Further, when he's talking to a Jewish audience, he's very plain about what had happened to him. And he, in the midst of having a vision, and he's speaking to Jesus in this vision. This is going to be from Acts 22:17-20. The Apostle Paul is explaining to Jesus what he was explaining to this Jewish audience. And he said, "Lord, they themselves understand that in one synagogue after another, I used to imprison and beat those who believed in you. And when the blood of your witness Stephen was being shed, I was also standing by approving and watching for the coats of those who were slaying him." Paul was free in admitting his background. Paul's misguided zeal was allowed to fully blossom before it would be confronted. This is where God, through Jesus, met him. He met him literally on the road where he was going to try and continue to destroy the church. That's where he was met. Ask ourselves, in some areas of my Christian walk, could I be misguided and in need of a change of direction? And if that's the case, and if, brethren, if one of us might be misguided and another sees that, are we going to say, "Well, too bad for them"? Or are we going to be willing to be with them through that, walk with them? Paul was faced with the responsibility of his thinking and his actions, because you don't just convert without any recourse. In his recounting of his conversion before King Agrippa, here's what he says. And we're going to be in Acts 16. We're going to start with verse 14, then we're going to go verses 15 to 16, and then we're going to jump down a few verses in a couple minutes. He's recounting this conversion, and he says, "And when we had fallen to the ground, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew dialect, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goats.'" Saul, Paul, the Apostle Paul, before King Agrippa, is explaining, "I was wrong. I was misdirected. I was going the wrong way. Who are you, Lord?" he says in verses 15 and 16. And the Lord said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But get up, stand on your feet. For this purpose, I have appeared to you, to appoint you a minister and a witness, not only to the things which you have seen, but also to things in which I will appear to you." And Jesus goes on and describes even more. Jesus here is dramatically and specifically speaking about what Saul's life would look like once he would be sanctified. And he said, "You will suffer for me. You will. You have a heart for God, and now you will suffer as you bring goodness and blessing and good news to others." He turned. He changed. Do I know where my brethren are in their Paul-like challenges? Do I contribute to a clear and scriptural direction of God's will in their lives? Am I patient enough for them to grow out of where they might be stuck? Paul's conclusion for this in explaining to King Agrippa is in Acts 26:19-23. "So, King Agrippa, I did not prove to be disobedient to the heavenly vision, but I kept declaring both to those of Damascus first, also at Jerusalem, and throughout all the region of Judea, and even to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God, performing deeds appropriate to repentance." So he recounts this to King Agrippa, and he said, "I was given a vision. I was given a direction, and I was not disobedient. Was he perfect? No. But he went forward after being so far off. What's our finding out where they are lesson? Following misguided zeal is destructive. Am I willing, like Paul was, to be directed and humble enough to follow that sanctified instruction? Am I willing to change directions? And what about our brethren? Do I allow myself to be part of such growth in my brethren's lives, or do I not engage in the process? Well, they think this or that or the other, and too bad about them. You know, it was unfortunate. They could have had such great potential. Really? Are we going to do that with one another? Haven't we been given an example that is so much higher? Brethren, as we deal with coming out of COVID, and again, we'll see how this all works out, you know, out in the world, we are coming face to face with others of like precious faith who may see things, who do see things in dramatically different ways than I do. I know what my experience is with it. I know what my nature is in relation to the disease and to having it, to vaccination and all of those things. So I have a very, very clear picture for myself, but my picture doesn't apply to you. Am I willing to figure out where you are so that I can relate to where you are? And then we can therefore establish a way to walk together. Not just with COVID now, brethren, but let's expand this to the big, big, big picture of our lives and our fellowship and our co-laboring. Fellowship isn't just, hi, how are you? It's so good to see you again. Fellowship is being engaged, tied together in the lives of those of like precious faith. Recovering our best connections and most personal fellowship in this COVID era is challenging. The immediate challenge we face reflects the larger challenges of faithfulness we all face as well. Let us not forget, this is a wonderful opportunity, this microcosm of experience, to contribute, to be able to get a hold of the other experiences of our brethren's lives as well. Let us stop, look, and listen. We and our brethren may be having similar challenges to some mighty and faithful servants of God, like Moses, like Gideon, like Peter, and like Paul. Thank God that he met them where they were. Let us do what our Father taught us by his own example. Where are they? Let's meet them where they are. Go find them and meet them. May the Lord add his blessing.